Welcome to the podcast of the European Music Council, Music Webs, Weaving Connections and Untangling Cultural Policies in Europe. The first episode is Corona, Solidarity and the Digital Cage.
Thank you so much for being with us for this very first EMC podcast episode. It's a first tryout. So I'm very happy that we have with us today Silja Fischer and Battista Tofoni, and the two of you can quickly introduce themselves. So my name is Simone Dutt. I'm one of the two Secretary Generals of the European Music Council. And I hand over to Silja.
Yes, hello, Simone, and hello, Battista. I'm Silja Fischer, and I work as Secretary General of the International Music Council.
I'm Battista Tofoni. Thank you for the invitation, by the way, Simone. And I'm the general manager of Europe Jazz Network, one of the granted network by Creative Europe. And we have 162 members from 35 European and non-European countries.
Yeah, great. So thank you. And when we had this thought about the podcast, actually, we had thought already to start a podcast last October, even before Corona. And then Corona somehow pushed us to think more about digital formats and all these things. And then we are a little bit late maybe with the first episode, because I think I talked to you about this already in March, Battista, I think,
yes. Or
at a very early stage.
Yes, I remember very well. Before the lockdown, yes.
Yes, exactly. So because we thought like it would be really nice to talk with EGN, Europe Jazz Network, because you're based in Italy, and because you were the first to be hit in Europe.
Yes. So, yes, I mean, it was and it is still, a very bad experience, of course. Looking to the situation when we were the first country locked down, was terrible for us, because we started to see, you know, the cancellation of the 100% of the concert festival and the closing of the venues. So we saw the disaster happening day by day, hour by hour, to be honest. And then when we locked down the country, and we felt a little bit isolated regarding Europe, let's say, because we received the first help from, other countries outside Europe, to be honest. And of course, the cultural sector, to be honest, reacted in a very strong way. I remember that at the beginning we signed it together with you, I think, a lot of a statement and letter to support to the European Union. And then, to be honest, we received a very positive answer from them. About the flexibility of the Creative Euro project, about the importance of culture. And then we received this, nice, let's say, message from the commissioner of the cultural sector, saying that we really appreciate that the cultural sector is speaking with one voice. Yeah. Despite of the fact that the cultural sector was unite, let's say, the political part was really, lacking in solidarity, to be honest, because we receive a lot of, help from outside, from Cuba, for example, from China in that period, from Albania and from other countries, but not from, other countries of the European Union. So we felt a little bit isolated. And then I think it was the reaction of all the other countries in Europe. Also the other countries felt isolated, I think. Because the answer to this big crisis has been not united in Europe, but every country took the different measures, let's say. So that's what the first problem I faced in this situation.
Absolutely.
And, yes.
I very much remember our talk, what you were referring to, about the lack of solidarity. And I remember that we also talked about this at EMC and how we can bring forward this solidarity idea. And then all of a sudden, there was a twist when talking to politicians and on a European Union level in the press, that the term solidarity was all of a sudden being treated as being a bad, because it was also misused by populist and right-wing politicians. And I felt like I'm getting crazy if a word, the word like solidarity, can have a negative meaning in you know, yes, getting, reaching out to other people or to other politicians. I was really, that was, I think, really very much in the middle of this, I don't know, in the middle of the corona crisis, how we can, I don't know, get together better and make our point that we want to, you know, be solidary with you, with everybody in there. And I really remember this crisis of the term, and I think this is so wrong that such a term can be misused.
That's totally interesting. I don't. Was it mainly in Germany? I don't remember this.
I think it was in Germany, because I think I read it in a newspaper article that some German politicians, reacted allergic to this term. We were about to launch a kind of a statement pleading for more solidarity. And then I thought like, oh, interesting. This is now getting difficult to use. So,
strange. Yes.
It's really terrible. I mean, the situation. Yes, I totally underline your thoughts regarding this. Yes, and we are speaking about culture. I mean, we are all involved in this culture. Culture means listening, solidarity. I mean, open-minded people that try to change the society. This is the, you know, our goal. We support the organization that are producing arts.
Yes, exactly.
Arts in Europe, and arts is quite crucial in this society more than ever. And yes, I mean, we were all shocked, let's say, about this. But now the reaction is really great, to be honest. And then we are trying to, I mean, our aims for everybody, even for us, that we are not, you know, working the production of the performing arts, is to change the society.
Yeah.
And this is the main aims, and more than ever, this is our main aims. And the challenge of the times is really give us, more responsibilities, to be honest, and pushing and kicking sometimes the back of these politicians.
Yeah, absolutely.
That is true.
Sorry, you can cut it.
No. This we will not cut. This we will leave in. You know, we didn't name.
No.
Name one soul. Yes, but I think
it's a battle. It's a battle between the humans and and the others.
And I mean, I think what was so nice in Italy, wasn't it? I mean, even in the middle of the lockdown, you had this very emotional and musical moments with the balcony singing.
Wow, was fantastic, because I live in a very small city, 3,000 people in here. And I had the opportunity to have both my kids here with me. Kids, I mean, one is 25, one is 15. So they play every night with bass and electric guitar outside. And there was, you know, the building in front of us was singing. And it was, you know, it's the reaction of the society to this isolation. It was really, you know, touching, really, everywhere.
Yeah. Absolutely. And this was also touching here. I mean, yeah, we had in Germany, we also had, because our lockdown was never that strict, so we were always allowed to go out of the house and into the parks. So we have a lot of musicians starting to play in the parks. And that was really lovely to see just people starting to play music in the parks, and little initiatives called Hinterhofkonzerte, so like backyard concerts. And
yes.
So that's really, really also, I mean, it's, so I think it really shows you that people, I mean, even if this more formalized or organized way of making music and listening to it was stopped, there were always ways around to do it. And so you don't see it in the podcast, but we see it because we're here on a Zoom call, but Battista has a fantastic picture as a background picture, but this is not from this year, from a festival with a lot of more people. And
yes, we had concerts with even 70,000 people for one concert, and it was, I'll show you a picture later, but after the podcast I'll send you some No, it's impossible now, of course.
Yeah.
I mean, after the balcony, just to go back to the balcony and the singing, that after that, I mean, we also registered the so-called streaming tsunami of the artists. It was also fantastic on the web, and the really, you know, they really tried to help the people and to pass these long days isolated at home. You know, it's another, you know, reason that push us to work in this direction, in the cultural direction for the future. Yes.
No, absolutely. Yeah, no, it's great. I mean, you can see the need for both, also from the musician side, to continue and to give something back. Mm-hmm. And then also from the audience to get something. But of course, now comes my little political, I don't know how you say that in English, erhobener Zeigefinger, the little, I don't know, but I don't know, attention thing. Uh-huh. Of course, the streaming, of course, we always have to make this part that, of course, it's also important that the musicians can make a living out of the streaming things. And this is, I think, a battle we have to fight after Corona, that it's not, you know, I think in an emergency and in a crisis, it's super that we do things for free and that we get, and that we are generous. I think this is so important that we're generous, but then afterwards that we don't get used to musicians just, you know, play for free on the internet. Mm. Great.
No, yeah, I totally right. I mean, it was a long discussion about the monetization of this streaming. I mean, it's important because the most affected, let's say, sector is the part of the artist, because the organization in some way they can react to the situation, and, you know, there are some plans also from the central government in each country to help the organization, or to help also the musicians. But the artists are the most affected, no doubt, regarding this. And then we had to find a way, I mean, to help them, I mean, organizing. I mean, we had some members of EGN, for example, that organized live concerts in a club with no audience. And then they streamed them, they paid all the, you know, the musicians. And then they also get some monetization coming from the audience.
Yeah, that's great.
And it's important. They not only pay the musician, but they also pay the electrician, you know, sound engineers and people that are working, because it's important, because this production chain, it's really important to help the whole production chain of the show business, let's say.
Mm.
Because I'm speaking now because of the festival you saw in my background of this sound engineer or people working in this sector. They are stacked since February. I mean, February, March, April, May, June. Now we are in July, 5 months without any income. It's really hard, you know.
Yeah.
It's really, really hard.
And that's true. Sometimes we forget about all the people working backstage, if I may say so. The main discourse is about the artist and they cannot perform. But sometimes I felt that the public discourse forgot about all the many, many, many people that work for the artist and work around the artist and make it possible for the artist to be on stage and to perform. And this, I was lacking a bit this more holistic view of the culture sector. Mm. Of course, the artists always are the public face, but we know how many people it takes for an artist to be on stage.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. For a simple trio or quartet, maybe on the background, there will be the production manager, the assistant, the sound engineer, the driver, all the management. I mean, it could be sometimes in a big organization, there could be 15, 20 people for a concert of a solo.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And
that's true.
You know, it's important also to think about that. Yes.
And just a word on the monetization of the streaming in our lounges with our African members. This came up too from our member in Zimbabwe, and the whole free culture discourse that kind of is very dangerous, and that there is this fear that the public will continue with this expectation that culture will be for free. So they have it on their radar, and they will have to, they told us, our colleagues in Africa, mainly notably in Zimbabwe, told us that they will have to do some advocacy work towards their governments too, in order to make sure that this discourse stops and that there is a recognition that these artists and all the others work, and that this work needs to be paid for.
How did the people, you know, that streamed the club concert, how did they get, so did they have a donation button, or how did they get some money from the audience?
Yeah. So for example, in the example I was quoting before, yeah. For example, in Pongebens in Austria, there was a concert and the promoter is a member of EGN, Christoph Huber, proposed to the audience a pay as you wish. Means mm-hmm. that the people, the audience, if they want to attend the concert, they could pay or they couldn't. I mean, it's up to them. And then he told me that in the first series he organized, he raised something like 2,000, 3,000 per concert. Cool. And then he splitted this money through the musicians, artists playing on stage, and the technicians working mm-hmm. for that concert. It was a very fair, to be honest, proposal for all of them. And the people, the audience, reacted very well. The trick of this was that the audience seated in their house with a beer in front of a monitor or a TV, and then the concert was starting at, let's say, 9 o'clock, and then the concert after the streaming disappeared from the internet. I mean, it's like to attend a live session, you know? And then this is a successful story, of course. Then there are a lot of unsuccessful stories regarding this. But I think this is a way also of, prove the solidarity of the audience and the link between the audience and the community with the venue, let's say.
Yeah. And I think you're right, because it's not only about us, you know, complaining, yes, but we also have to get money out of the streaming. It's exactly offering these possibilities. I mean, so yes. That it's not that the audiences are not willing to pay.
No. They're willing to pay. Of course, the audience will like, I mean, the theater has been created 2,500 years ago by the Greeks, and you saw the picture that they sent to you, yes. So there is a need of socialization between the people, and there is a need of the to improve these links and relationship between the artists and the arts and the audience, of course. I mean, everybody would like to go back to meet each other in a theater and to see a play and to listen to a concert. No doubt.
Absolutely.
Yes.
I just bought a ticket yesterday. My first ticket after Corona I bought yesterday to go to an open air. I need to go. I need to see a concert live again. I can't I can't have it anymore, only streamed. So what are the concerts? What size are the concerts you're currently organizing instead of the 300,000 people in your background picture?
No, now in Italy there is the rules of people can organize concerts indoor for up to 200 people with social distancing. Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. And to take all the measures of sanification and social distancing, etc., and up to 1,000 people open air, despite of the capacity of the place. There is all, I think only one, no, it's this is the rule for everybody. And then you have to control the access for all the people. You must have, the name, surname, and mobile phone for 15 days. You have to keep this information.
Yeah.
Because in case something happened, I mean, they can reach all the people attending that event. So these are the rules. And we have to do the sanification of the places, of the seats, of the mic with the same. The artists have to use different mics, and there is a specific, for example, law for the orchestras, because the big orchestra, the symphonic orchestra, must stay on stage with 1 meter 30 centimeters for the winds.
Yeah.
And 2 meters for the horns, for example, because they produce a lot of.
The famous aerosols.
Sorry, Battista, who defined those rules?
The central government. But I think that in that specific case for the orchestras, I saw that there was very specific measures. that I'm sure that they contacted some, you know, professional of the sector, because it's so precise regarding the orchestra and the live concert. Despite of that, we have, you know, I did recently, I traveled by train, and it was fantastic because it was a social distancing. Despite of that, we saw some picture about the planes that are really scaring me, to be honest.
Yes.
So I decided if they don't change something, I will not fly in the next months, because it's, I don't know why. I mean, we must be on social distancing, 1 meter and 20 centimeters, open air in the mountains, for example, or whatever. And then we have to be stuck in a plane, close to each other without any social distancing. This is ridiculous. In a closet, you know, space.
Yeah.
Where
absolutely.
You cannot escape.
Yeah, yeah. Where they can sell all the seats and they have on the plane, and you sit next to each other. Yeah, that's really.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. And one other question is that I know that, you know, the flight company produce a lot of the percentage of the GDP for every country, but the cultural sector together with the touring sector, in Italy, for example, we produce, this is a research, a public research, the 16%. Touristic and cultural sector of the GDP. Are we important in producing this GDP? Is an important part of the society? I mean, not only in Italy, in the world. Mm. So, you know,
16% is, wow, it's amazing. 16%
touristic and cultural together. Eh?
Yeah, yeah, wow.
And I mean, and there are similar figures for the EU out there. I mean, which is then of course Europe wide. I just I really have such a bad memory for figures. I just try to, because I know we have also included them in our statements, you know, on providing more funds for culture, because I mean this is something that everybody looks always at the strong industries, and they somehow unfortunately they miss out the potential that there is a lot of workforce jobs in the cultural sector. So I have them here now, I looked them up. So it's a study that was commissioned by the European Commission, and so it's that the value added to the European Union GDP accounts for 509 billion euro, and it's over 12 million people in full-time jobs. So this is really, I don't know why people don't, yeah, exactly, yes. see these numbers as well. Because I mean, talking really political here now, it's really frustrating to see, at least on a European Union level, that a lot of people say, yes, the artists have been hit heavily by Corona, or the musicians, the performers. And then you see new figures on the multi-annual financial framework for Creative Europe, for example, mm-hmm. and they go down.
Yes.
And you think it's nice that you praise us. It's nice that you say you're important, but if we don't get adequate budgets, I mean, especially now after the Corona crisis, where a lot have said you have been hit heavily and you have to be supported, and also with the React EU, the, you know, the rescue funds that are out there. It's culture is in there. That's right, but it's a lot given to the member states, and they can decide how they use it and if they use it for culture. So this is not promoting international mobility, for example, or the European idea. Also, this is really difficult.
Yeah, I also think there's a big fear, a big risk that that countries will really focus only on themselves. I mean, and if we talk about culture, at least I mean our work of all our organizations, international cooperation, mobility is the DNA of our work.
Absolutely.
And we need also to make sure that these funds that go to member states only are invested into culture and can be used for transnational exchanges too, because this is what is needed. We started our discussion with solidarity, this is exactly what is needed.
Absolutely.
To bring, once again, to bring Europe together, to keep it together.
Absolutely. This must be our main focus, to be honest. We discuss a lot during also our webinars about, you know, the possibility to open up and to recreate, you know, the a way of touring Europe in a different way. So we had this activity called Take the Green Train, and we are really thinking about, you know, to and pushing also the members to organize, you know, routing by train that is safe, and then to organize this slow transnational mobility. We need more days. It's okay. You know, life is not so too short to spend one day more on the train and visit the people and have more connection with the local community. So instead of having the artists coming to, you know, for one gig, they can stay for 1 or 2 days, do something like an artistic residency and meet the people and meet the local community and eat the local food. Just so let's stop to have this, you know, very fast, you know, food experience, and also this very fast, you know, touring by plane from one place to another. So, like in the past, I mean, artists, I mean, beginning of the 80s, were traveling mainly by train in Europe, or by bus or by car. Yeah. So they had the possibility to create a sustainable routing, let's say. Sustainable routing, yes, this could be the word. Because now, I mean, before the COVID-19, artists were sent by their manager to play to Oslo and then to Sicily, and then back to Bergen, and then back to Bari, and then on the east, Barcelona, and then and Kiev, and then back to Madrid.
Absolutely.
This is ridiculous. Yeah. I mean, absolutely.
Absolutely, you're so right. I mean, if this could be one positive outcome of COVID-19, that would be great. You know, that we get all more sensible about how do we travel and how what are the effects on the environment of our work. I think absolutely. And now comes a little advertising, bing, 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 because of course you can all check out the EMC website on our work that we did on music and climate action. So there's a workshop online and a panel discussion online, and we talked a lot about these things. But of course, talking is good to get your mindset, but then of course it's also about doing.
Yes. Yeah. But I really like this workshop, because it gave me so many ideas, and I hope to the others, other listeners, to the audience too, because it was there were like really little things that you can change. It's not the big things. I think it's really the sum of the little steps that you can take. And I got a lot of inspiration from the various presentations. So thank you for organizing this. It was really great. But just, I have a question. I mean, EGN is covering so many countries. How did your members keep together, if I may say so?
In this period or for the future? I mean,
this period, and how will it influence the future?
Okay, so in this period, when we started our lockdown in Italy, we immediately start to think about to do something together. So we immediately, you know, call it a crisis unit inside EGM. Mm-hmm. So we invite the people that would like to speak about this in a think tank. And then we met regularly, and we are continuing to meet, to be honest, regularly every week. And so we started to think about this. I mean, first, we were shocked, of course, I mean, astonished about the situation. So we start to research about all the measures taken by the central government. So we did the research. Mm. And the research also help our, you know, members to understand and to propose to the country the best practices, let's say. Mm. We did in Italy, for example, we did in Germany and in France, etc. I mean, it was an exchange of information that was lacking at the period. And then we decided to do immediately to react to the situation, because we canceled all our activities, live activities. So we started to organize these webinars. I mean, we launched the idea of the webinars. And has been a successful idea, because we had an average of 80-100 professional every time. And then at the end, because the people maybe couldn't attend live, we had 5,000 of views of the webinars. That was great. And so we start to discuss about, you know, everything. I mean, about the isolation of the artists. So we invited also artists from USA and from Europe, of course, about the monetization of the streaming, about the problem of closing the boundaries, because this problem that you raised, Silja, it was, you know, we saw at the beginning that the countries try to help only the local and national musicians, artists, and this was a signal that, I mean, Europe was in a way collapsing of the idea of opening and etc. So I mean, we did you know, a fantastic yes. I'm really proud. We are really proud that we did this. Now, we were used, you know.
I think you can be.
I think so too. I think your webinars are impressive.
And we call, you know, experts from all over the world, from all the countries, and we try also to maintain a gender balance. I mean, we did we had fantastic moderator coming from BBC and from other countries. I mean, it has been, you know, a way to work in a proper way. Of course, I mean, the digital cage, I call it like this, is not the live, you know, experience. Of course, it's not.
I like the word digital cage because it's I couldn't find a word to express what many of us feel, but it's exactly that. Thank you, Batista.
But you were living already a little bit in the digital cage, no? I mean, you as EGN, I think, it couldn't affect you really because you were anyway working like
that. Yes, but if you balance the digital cage with the live experience, it's something else. If you live only in the digital cage, at the end of the day, you get, you know, stoned completely. Because, I mean, we you know that we have a virtual office because we don't have an office in EGN. I mean, we have an office in Pantin where all the accountancy is there, etc. But the three of us, the staff, is living in different parts of Italy. And also the board is spread all over, you know, the world. So we started at the beginning to have this virtual office. So we have some experience. I mean, Zoom now is on the mouth of everybody speaking about Zoom. We are using now Zoom. We started to use Zoom 6 years ago. And I remember when we subscribed the first time, the company called me on the phone. You know, it was a small company. And then tried to, you know, the customer care office called me and say, do you need some help? No, I'm okay. I mean, love the situation. And then if I had the money to invest in the share of Zoom now, it's too late.
You are EGN would be rich now, yes.
Yes. I'm so unfortunately.
And I then, know someone who did.
Really?
Oh, okay, great. So luck for him or her. And then yes, but I mean, you have to balance. I mean, it's impossible to live in this digital cage. I start in the morning 8:30. I mean, for example, yesterday we had a board meeting. We have other meetings inside. I mean, you cannot live here. I mean, it's a fruitful means of tool for speaking, for meeting, but the live experience in the arts, of course, and in the conference and in the working group is totally different. Not because we are touching each other, but interaction is something different with and the social. I mean, we are social animals. No way. And then so we have to use this tool that is important with care. I have a list of things that I never did. For example, the webinar. The webinar, we decided to have the webinar of 45, 50 minutes maximum. Because if you stay more than 1 hour connected, you lose your concentration. No way. Yeah. I saw people that organize webinar over 3 hours, 2 hours. It's a waste of time to me. So I have this list of the best practices. Stay online 50 minutes and take 50 minutes and take 10 minutes of rest outside the monitor. And do only 3 or 4, you know, meetings per day on Zoom. But it's not possible.
I just wanted to ask, so did you keep to that list? Of course.
No. The answer is no. But because we are locked down, I mean, there is no other way. I mean, we can write, we can share experiences through Ducal, the G Suite, the Google, you know, environment, etc. We need to see each other, we need to speak, but now we are forced to work in this direction. So we have to take some countermeasures to not to, you know, die in front of the computer.
Mm-hmm. So how do you do that? Sorry. Yeah. No, you.
So exactly these countermeasures, how do you manage not to die in front of your computer? I think that that's a question that is really everybody's asking himself, herself.
No, I'm in a vortex now. So we are in a vortex. I mean, for the EGN staff after the lockdown, we increased the workload of the 200%, to be honest, because, you know, everybody was, we are collecting all the information. We are the hub of all the information for our members. I mean, our members are, you know, concert live concert producers. So they were stuck in their home. They were needed this kind of information. So we organized this webinar. We received tons of email, coming from our members. So the workload really increased. And also we had to cancel to maintain, you know, the activity of the Creative Euro, because it's important also to maintain these kind of activities. They are crucial for our association. So I didn't apply any countermeasure to my personal life. I'm honest. I'm the bad guy.
Because I can just confirm that we did the same at EMC. Like, it was, wow. I know that at the very start we thought like, oh, do we have to send people to short time work or, you know, short labor work or things like that? And it was just the contrary. We just increased our workload a lot because it was so much to do. Like you say, you provide information and adapt and change things to online. And I completely get it. I mean, I think it was the same for us and for a lot. Yeah.
Batista, has any of your members already resumed live concerts the public?
A lot. Yes. In Italy, for example, I mean, there are a lot. And the one that are allowed, the country that allowed them to produce live concert, they started. I mean, a lot of them during March and April, May did this festival on streaming with all musicians and social distancing. But now, I mean, there are a lot of people announcing, you know, the festivals and the opening of the club. For example, also in Norway, they are allowed, I think, for 100 people in the venues.
Okay.
Social distancing, and they started already since 1 month, I think, and also in other countries. Yes, I mean, all the people, I mean, the professional are willing to do that, not only because to maintain I mean, their main job is to produce, you know, live concert to engage the community, no doubt, and to let the artist help. I mean, we are speaking about small venue with maybe 3 or 4 people working there to big organization with 80, 90, 100 people working for this organization. So, I mean, it's important also to create job opportunities. I mean, they have some, you know, also social responsibilities. So they're willing to really to organize something in this challenging time on the, you know, full respect of the law, of the local and national law, of course. Yes.
So thank you, everybody. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for the invitation.
Yeah, it was really great having you.
This was the first episode of the EMC podcast, Music Webs, Weaving Connections and Untangling Cultural Policies in Europe. Every few weeks, we will talk with people from the European music sector about connections and policies. We are very happy and honored that the music for this podcast was composed by Moritz Eggert and performed by Louise Enzian on the baroque harp and Moritz Eggert on the piano. The European Music Council is supported by the Creative Europe Programme of the European Union, the Federal Government Commissioner for Culture and the Media of Germany, and the City of Bonn.